Before we start, we just wanted to let you know that this episode contains discussions about sexual assault, rape culture, and trauma. A full list of content warnings are available in the episode description. Also, we discuss in detail the film It Follows, so there will be spoilers if you haven't seen the film. Thanks.
Hi, this is Panic Pixie Screen Girls, a podcast about horror and anxiety. And I'm Holly, and this is my friend Becky. Say hi, Becky.
Hello.
Hello.
So today we are going to talk to you about the 2014 film It Follows, which is an American modern horror directed and written by David Robert Mitchell. And it stars Micah Monroe as the 19-year-old girl Jay, who is pursued by a supernatural entity after she has sex. But there are some quite complicated rules. So what are the rules, Holly?
It's a sex curse! So basically there's a demon which follows you, but it can only move quite slowly. But it can take the form of anyone, including people you know or strangers, and it's invisible to anyone else who's not under the curse. And the only way to get rid of it is to sleep with someone, and then it follows them. If they die, because the demon is going to try and kill them, but just with very slow walking, then it will go back to you. So it's kind of a chain effect. So she's had this date with this guy, and he's tricked her and given it to her, but then told her afterwards. And then so she's kind of running away from it, but eventually passes it on.
So it kind of turns the traditional horror trope on its head of having sex will kill you. I mean, in some ways that's true, because if you didn't have sex, then you wouldn't have had the demon. But also, more importantly, to get rid of it, you've got to have sex again. So I guess in some ways it's both abstinence and pro-sex, which feels very similar to my own life. It made me think of the succubus and incubus demon, which is a succubus. We had to look this up because we couldn't remember which way around it was. Succubus is a female demon that you wake up from sleeping and it's on your chest having sex with you. And incubus is the male version. So it very much made me kind of think about this sort of sleep sex demon, which I thought was quite interesting.
There's a specific scene with that neighbourhood kid, Greg, I think his name is. I think we think that the demon's taking the form of his mother, but then Jay comes in and she's like basically straddling him and kind of shagging him to death, essentially, and it's very disturbing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what's a little incest between friends, but yeah, sure. So we should probably talk about why we chose this as our first one. So for me, I think it's a film that we both really, really liked. So that's one reason. And it's also a film that genuinely scared me. I watch a lot of horror films, so I'm not always scared by horror films, but this is a film that did stay with me for a long time. So I thought it was definitely worth our analysis, particularly with the anxiety angle that we're going at.
Yeah, definitely.
And what about you?
I saw it originally when I was working as a cinema usher, so I think I saw it multiple times, but we didn't get a lot of horror films, and I do remember it being very scary. Although I think I saw different things in it this time, and that's kind of, I think, more I've changed and the world's changed, and that will be something very interesting to talk about as well. And it's like, it has the logic of a nightmare, I guess. That, you know, it could be anyone, it could be anywhere, you know. It's just when you're walking and you just can't run any faster and something's coming towards you, but everything's slowed down.
Yeah, definitely. But equally, I said this to you before, it made me think of like Stephen King's Steven Spielberg sort of Gang of Kids films, which are kind of popular now when you think about things like Stranger Things and the It remake. It has that innocence to it. They are a group of children, but it's also permeated with like just sexual hormones are dripping over it everywhere and oozing out of every pore. So it's sort of innocent, but also not in an overtly exploitative sexuality way. Like, it still feels like innocent sexual exploration as well.
Yeah, I like that, that they're kind of, they're like real kids, basically. I think our standard thing of teen sexuality, especially in horror films, is kind of usually teens, kind of Dawson's Creek syndrome. They're like all played by 27-year-olds and then also in tiny bikinis.
Yeah.
Teen sex is the kind of spectacle rather than it being about the experience of being a teen.
Yeah, she's not very sexualized. The main character, Jay, is not very sexualized, even though it's all about her kind of relationships and sexual experiences. She's not wandering around in not very many clothes, and every time she trips over, a boob doesn't fall out, you know, so she's not like... And she is a 19-year-old girl, but she does look quite young as well.
Yeah, she has just normal pants, and she has like a one-piece swimming costume that just, it just looks practical.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a swimming costume for swimming.
Yeah, wow, instead of the other things. But the other thing to say about it as well is it does have like this really timeless quality. It sort of had an 80s feel to it, which again made me think of the whole Stephen King, Steven Spielberg thing. But it did have that sort of 80s-ness, and there's a lot of synth music, which is great. And then we talked about this little, I guess it's a Kindle that one of the characters has, which looks like a shell, which she's constantly reading Dostoevsky from because she's obviously quite precocious. But it's really weird because it feels really timeless and this doesn't fit in with it because it's kind of modern technology, but it also doesn't look like modern technology.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it kind of contributes to the feeling that we don't really entirely know what era this is because it's kind of, yeah, it's like a flip phone. But it's also, I don't think you could read books on your phone in like the, you know, 80s or whatever.
Yes. It looked a bit like a Polly Pocket to me. Yeah. Do you remember those?
Yes. Yeah, I think everyone who saw this film wanted one of those. Because yeah. I hope they make, maybe they make. Oh my God, Google it.
Definite merch like, attack.
We're falling down the rabbit hole. We're like on Etsy for like hours.
So the entity, so we've said the entity is this supernatural entity. It can take the form of anybody. So sometimes it could be somebody that you know, and sometimes it's a stranger that you don't know. Sometimes you can identify them because they look quite horrifying. There is some sort of like oozing and dripping and, you know, clearly deadness of them. But also one of the main ways to identify them is they're kind of slow, steady, constantly coming after you, very much like zombies, and that very much contributes to the feeling of dread. Even though you can outrun them because they're very, very slow, you could easily outrun them and you can get in a car and you can drive away from them, but it's that constant determination of no matter where you go, they're still coming for you. And that's what sort of feeds that kind of primal instinct of you just can't get away. And I think that's one of the things that makes it feel very scary to me.
Yeah. People moving too fast or people moving too slow is kind of equally eerie. But yeah, it's also the kind of relentless aspect. It reminded me a bit of the Javier Bardem character in No Country for Old Men, because he's scary because he will never stop. And yeah, you can't reason with him because he's just like, just because. I just want to kill people. I wonder if the different forms of the demon, some of them are from the victims. Because then, yeah, we were talking about the first girl that's kind of looks like something's happened to her and is kind of in ripped clothes and looks kind of beaten up and is urinating in the house. And I wonder if they're taking the forms of the victims, but then they just seem like they're just not there, you know, they're not present really. Because it's kind of almost, it is a zombie kind of thing. Because you couldn't like reason with them or plead with them. They're just, you know.
Yeah, they've definitely got no actual cognizance to them. Mm. You couldn't have a conversation with them. They're just constantly out to get you no matter what. There's no getting away from it.
Mm. I know I feel very different viewing it kind of post-Me Too era and stuff. The kind of rape culture and sexual assault is kind of part of this theme of this film.
Yeah, so it does feel very much like that's very prevalent throughout it. The two things that came up for me were it felt very tied to rape and sexual assault, but also like a fear of what will happen when you have sex, like a sexual fear around catching something, around that kind of diseases, around, you know, like just general fear of sex. So there were those two things. And you said that you remembered at the time when it came out, there was a lot about kind of that sexually transmitted disease angle, but probably yeah. less around the assault angle. And
yeah.
we feel that if this film came out now,
yeah,
people would probably talk about it in a different way.
Definitely. I mean, I feel like I saw a different film. I mean, it really scared me at the time, but then it was just more, I think the vague threat and constant menace was what scared me. But now it was more, I was kind of identifying with her, like, that, you know, no one else can see it. Do people believe her? Because when the date kind of changes, and it's really shocking. So it's, you know, they're vibing, you know. They're having okay. a really nice time. And then, you know, in the car, and it's, you know, it's all, you know, pretty hot, and like, and then they're just cuddling, and then suddenly he kind of chloroforms her, and it's really, really shocking. And just that you, you know, do you really know anyone? Because then they say, there's this line, it's like, it can look like someone you know, or just a stranger in a crowd, it can look like anyone. Just like, you know, can someone have something in them that could hurt you deeply, and you wouldn't even know it until you're in that situation?
It very much plays on to that angle of like the date rape thing. They're yeah. on a date, you yeah. see the date, you see them go to the cinema, and you know, they're having a lovely time, and it seems quite innocent, and you're quite into this relationship for them, and she really clearly likes him. Yeah. And then they have sex in the back of his vehicle, and then suddenly, as you say, he changes. And so that gives you that angle of like, do you ever really know somebody? Like, you don't know what's behind them. You can't really trust it. So, yeah, it definitely had that. And then, as you said, I think it's worth really emphasising this point because it really struck a chord with me, is that no one else can see it. So for a long time, nobody knows that she's telling the truth. So it really encapsulates that sexual assault feeling of, is she making it up? Is she telling the truth? There's nobody there that can corroborate it. And she goes out of her way to try and corroborate it by finding the guy and by trying to show her friends that it's real. But you were saying that you were quite pleased with the way that even though her friends don't know that it's true and they're not sure they believe her, they kind of still support her, which is quite
yeah.
nice.
Yeah, I think they are good friends. I mean, apart from the one guy, but we're going to kind of talk about that later. Yeah, they got her back, you know, and she's just like, I can't be here right now. We just need to run away. We need to go somewhere else. I just can't, you know. They're like so patient and kind with her. Yeah, I thought that was quite moving.
Yeah, it's very sweet. And that's quite good. So that there's other things that play into that kind of sense of the sexual assault for me. There's a lot of voyeurism. So we talked about this. People are watching all the time. There's a bit near the beginning where she's swimming in her swimming pool and like the boys next door are watching her through the fence or through the bushes. But she knows that they're watching her. And then again, at the beginning of the film, there's another girl and she runs out into the street. She's running away from the demon, but people in the street are watching her do this and kind of like, nobody's really helping, but they are kind of watching and trying to work out what's going on. And there's a constant sense throughout the film with the way the camera works, where it pans around. It reminded me very much of that scene in Taxi Driver where he's like on the phone and then it pans to the corridor, just shows you the rest of the corridor. Often the camera just pans and doesn't show you anything particular. It's not showing you anything specific that you're looking for, but it adds to that hypervigilance sense of like, there's something there, you're constantly watching, something's constantly watching you, you always have to be on your guard. And I think as a woman, for me, that very much plays into how I feel when I'm walking somewhere where I feel like I might be at risk. I'm constantly watching every exit, being aware of my surroundings, listening for footsteps, and you're just aware that at any point from anywhere something could happen.
Yeah, and I think you don't realize kind of how normalized it is until you talk to like a guy or something, that they're just like, oh, what, you know, why have you got your keys in your fist walking down the street? What are you doing? You
know? Or just different routes. I mean,
yeah.
Like, there are certain places I will walk. If I'm walking home from a gig late at night on my own, there are certain places that I would avoid. and therefore I end up walking a much longer route home. So I can text my husband and say, I'm going to be home, I'm just leaving now, but it'll take me a lot longer. And he'll be like, why did it take you so long to come home? And I'm like, well, because I walked all the way around here in order to avoid these areas.
I think for me, it was more rather than what would happen. It was more that it felt like it was my responsibility. And then if something had happened, because I remember a while ago, because someone was attacked locally, and then there was a whole thing on social media about, you know, and friends of mine, and they were just saying, like, you know, why was she out so late? Why wasn't someone walking out? Would she get a cab? You know, like, that you'd have the added layer of being shamed for your own assault.
And there's something that they talk about in the film as well, where there's a scene where they're driving through a not so nice part of town. The kids all say, the girls, none of the guys say this, but the girls say, I was never allowed to come past this street on my own. I'd always have to ask permission, or I'd have to have someone with me. I'm not usually allowed into this part of town. But there are two guys there and they don't say the same thing. So there's a sense that the women don't feel safe in this particular environment. And I think that very much fed into why some of this chimes with me, and the fact that she is a woman. Even though this demon can attack men, and it does throughout the film, there is something more potent about the attachment to a woman that chimes quite strongly with that sexual safety aspect, I think.
They choose to focus more on the female victims of it. But then also it kind of more often takes a female form as well. It was quite interesting how, like, the first two forms of it are like kind of nude or semi-clad women. I think it would have been a bit heavy-handed if it was just like a naked man, you know?
Yeah. And I think it would have felt a different kind of film if the demon following her is always a man. Then it becomes very much like it would feel like a very heavy-handed lesson in rape and rape culture, whereas this feels much more subtle, but still gives you that same sense of dread.
Yeah, because really it's her date that's done this specifically to her, a date that's brought the trouble to her. It's not, you know, this demon has no particular attachment to any particular person beyond the mechanisms of the curse. So she does have a kind of confrontation with the original date about it, and he's kind of giving them tips and stuff, but I think he gets off pretty lightly. Actually, he's sex cursed her.
Yeah, he does. And he also says it's not done with him, so it's still coming for him, even though he's passed the curse on, which is quite interesting.
Well, I think he was like, it was watching him, but I think it was like, because if it killed her, then it would have to go back to him, so it maybe it also needs to know where he is.
Yeah, at all times. Plus, oh, God.
He can't have a car or anything, so it's just like, he's got to plan, like, a really long walk. He's just got, like, getting all of the pins on Google Maps to kind of, you know.
Yeah, it's, like, I don't know. It's an age-old question, isn't it? But I don't know why we're scared of things that we can justifiably outrun quite simply and easily. I think you could, like, get on a plane and go to Hawaii or something and it's not going to be able to follow you. But then it would somehow get to you. Like, that's the sort of overarching, like, fear and instinct, is it's always going to somehow be there.
Yeah.
So there's something about that I was talking to you about water. So water features quite heavily in the film. She swims in a swimming pool a few times, and then there's a bit at the end where they're trying to kill the demon and they use a big swimming pool. And there's something, for me, I associate water with kind of rebirth. And I think some of that is to do with sort of knowledge of Jewish heritage, and in the Jewish culture have something called a mikveh, where you have a kind of ritual bathing after you have menstruated. There's a ritual bathing before you can then have sex again with your husband. And also before you get married, you have to go into the mikveh and you are reborn as the wife that you are now going to be. And you're killing your single life and letting it go. And so for me, that's the thing that it instantly brought up. Obviously, other people wouldn't make that association, but that was a thing that it really struck me. And there is something around, again, tying women and sexuality and menstruation all together. That's always quite a potent thing. And it made me think about the sort of sexual scariness of young women in their prime. Like in films, young women that are just coming of age are always portrayed as being quite dangerous. And there's always, in horror films, there's always something quite dangerous about them. The final girl is often a young woman, like of that era. She's just coming into her prime. Although I would argue, as someone who is nearly 40, that I am coming into my prime right now, but that's another story. Yeah. But, you know, there's poltergeists, for example. Poltergeists are attracted to, they're supposed to come about when young women are going through that hormonal phase, and there's always the young women having sex and all of those kinds of things. So she is at that period in her life, and then this is when this happens. So it does, for me, very much kind of make me think of the fact that young women are scary, especially when they're bleeding and sexually powerful and scary.
The film nerd in me, I just was making a list of all the horror films I could think of that had scenes in swimming pools. Cat People, the Val Luton, The Faculty.
Yeah.
Oh, Jennifer's Body.
Yep.
And Let the Right One In. Which is
awful. Oh, yeah.
We were talking about that they're all kind of out of hours swimming. So, because it's like a public swimming pool or like a, you know, daytime, so it's not scary at all. I mean, I think there's like technical aspects of the kind of the play of, you know, light on the water and reflections and to show kind of above and below the water, and also the, you know, potential voyeurism and nudity as a kind of very flimsy pretext for mainly female nudity. But it's a weird, because it's like, it's also, it's somewhere they used to go as children, isn't it? The old swimming pool.
Yeah, so again, it sort of links in with that. Maybe the loss of innocence, and they're going back to a point where they were more innocent.
Yeah. Well, because then they're talking about finding the porn magazines. They're just curious, but then they had them all like spread out on the lawn, and the mum comes and like, just like scoops up at all of it. It's like, oh my God, oh my God. You know?
So you want to talk about the relationship with the boy. There are two main guys in this gang of kids. One of them is an older brother who she has previously had some kind of relationship with. And then she, spoiler alert, has sex with him in order to pass on the curse. And then there's his younger brother. And his younger brother is completely in love with her. But yeah, the relationship is not as cute and innocent as you might think.
No. Because I think there's so many shots of her with other men and him just having this real, like, puppy dog kind of mooning expression all the time. I think it's just, yeah, as women it looks very different, because then other people are like, oh, he's, you know, he's sweet, he's kind of non-threatening, he's just like a good friend, he's such a good friend. But then it's very, very clear that he's kind of just waiting. He's just like, I'm gonna get my chance if I just, you know, I'll wear her down, I'll just always be there when she needs me, and, you know, but like he thinks he's lined up for something. You know, and he has this thing that he's like, says, oh, why him? Why not me? You know, you knew that I liked you.
Yeah, I felt like there's two ways you can choose to view that relationship. And I think a lot of people would view it in a sweet way. He's the one that loves her the whole way through. He actually loves her. All these other people just want to hurt her or use her. He's the one that loves her. But there is something that it makes me think of, a kind of, it's very stalkery and voyeuristic. And as we said before, there's a strong sense of entitlement. He feels entitled to a relationship with her. And she's clearly not interested in him and doesn't see him in that way. But yet they do end up together at the end. Yeah, I found that relationship potentially troublesome. I wonder how the director feels about it. I wonder whether he directed it in that way, or whether he has directed it in the way of it's sweet and lovely and he doesn't feel that vibe that we get from it.
Yeah, because I don't know whether he's supposed to be like her white knight in the end, they'll be together. But yeah, I certainly didn't feel that way. Also, this kind of almost throwaway bit at the end when they're together and you see him kind of curb crawling, essentially. It seems like there's the implication that he's certainly planned to, even if he hadn't, of like passing the curse on to a sex worker, you know, which is...
What a champ.
Yeah, I hate that guy.
But, I mean, that wouldn't be the greatest thing. I mean, if he passes it on to some poor unsuspecting sex worker, if she dies, it still goes back to him. So I don't know that, you know, they're winning at life or anything.
I mean, I suppose they're more likely to pass it on more quickly.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. Maybe that's the idea.
But yeah, it's a total Madonna whore thing. There's just like, there's the girlfriends and then there's the sex workers. And, you know, their lives are considered more disposable, which is really grim.
Yeah.
As feminists.
I think the other thing that is slightly anti-feminist about the film is the main girl. There are lots of good things about it. The way she's portrayed, like we talked about, she's not overly sexualized. There is a lot of, like, judgment about her having boyfriends and having had previous relationships that come from other people. Yeah. But generally, she is cool with it and she's quite happy and she's living her life and she's fine. So all of that is quite good. But she's also a bit pathetic. She's not really the fighter. She's not really, like, she's relying on other people to save her because she's so terrified. So, yeah, she's not, like, the strong person. But equally, I feel like that sits with the situation. Like, she's had this horrendous thing happen to her and then she's got this support network of friends around her who are trying to save her and save her life. And that does sort of seem quite true and does feel quite comfortable. She's not a feisty feminist hero, I think, as a character.
Well, I mean, not all female characters have to be Wonder Woman. You know, they just need to be kind of three-dimensional and just not a cliche.
Yeah, which she definitely isn't. You get a strong sense, I feel like you get a strong sense of she's a young girl just growing up, just beginning to find out who she is as a person. And then she makes a mistake with her heart and falls for the wrong guy. And then something terrible happens to her. And what we don't know, and you could choose to view, is that whether this sexual demon is real or not. Is it actually all in her own head? Is it actually her dealing with the sexual assault that she's experienced and perhaps dissociating?
Yeah, but I mean, I guess there's the point where, and I don't know whether this makes it less scary, because as the beach scene is the first time where its physical presence is confirmed, because you see one of the others hitting it with a chair and it kind of grabs something out of the air and things, but it's still invisible. I mean, is that silly? It is slightly.
I feel like that scene is quite scary because they all kind of think something's wrong. They know she's genuinely terrified. They know she's genuinely terrified of something. They're not really sure whether they believe her. But then they all see something that they can't explain. And yeah, Suddenly it becomes very real. So I think that's quite scary. And there's also quite a good, like, jump scare there as well with the thing coming through the door and stuff.
Oh, yeah, that was really scary with the little creepy little kid.
Yeah, so in terms of, like, the scares in the film, there are some elements of extreme body horror. Not massively, just a few bits, to kind of give you the sense of otherworldliness and horrificness. Generally, it's that slow burn of dread, isn't it? But there are some jump scares as well, peppered throughout the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel they're unearned jump scares, because it's just both the pacing that facilitates the scare and the content of the scare are actually scaring. There's not loads of, like, false alarms. And then I think they've built the atmosphere to make that really effective.
Yeah, it's a very atmospheric film. Yeah. And, like, generally the slow burn of the pace is, for me, what encapsulates that constant building of dread, which again just links into that feeling of, like, you know, everyday sexism. If you've not heard about everyday sexism, definitely look it up. Look up hashtag on Twitter. The sort of concept of that is that it's a drip, 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 a constant drip, drip, drip on your psyche. So it's all kind of small little things that are quite inconsequential on their own, but they drip and they build up to this constant heaviness and this weight that you're carrying around all the time. And that very much feels like this film. There's a lot of things in there, little drips, and then often a lot of them are not that scary on their own, but it's this constantness of it and the relentlessness of it, and it just builds up into this weight of proper fear. And I genuinely couldn't shake, the first time I saw this film, I genuinely couldn't shake that uneasiness for several days after watching it, which, as I say, isn't that usual for me for films. So I feel like it was a very effective film.
Yeah, no, me neither. Definitely. It's the kind of film you could have nightmares about, because it's got so many of the elements of a kind of classic nightmare.
Yeah, definitely. I would say in terms of people who shouldn't watch this film, you may find it quite triggering if you've had any kind of sexual assault. That might possibly be difficult for you. Otherwise, I would highly advise watching it. I think it's a really good modern horror, definitely worth a shot.
Yeah, it holds up so well. I was really pleased because I remember I was worried that it was just that it was a clever idea and then it wouldn't be on the rewatch. It wouldn't really be up to much, but it was just, it's really well put together. It's really well paced and acted and shot and everything. The music is great, as we said.
Yeah, and it's got a sense of, I guess because it feeds into that kind of 80s, it is a bit like a kind of, you know, schlocky slasher movie in many ways. It has all of those elements of those films in it, but just done in a better and more responsible way. Yeah. Like, it has that sort of like sexualization, those relationships. It has like the constant person that's coming to get you, whether it's Freddy or Jason or somebody like the monster, the Halloween, the something constantly coming after you. It's got all of that stuff in it. It's got this kind of 80s look to it. It's got young people in it. It's got all of that, but it just has a different slant on it. And it's much more subtle, but in that way, it's much more intelligent and much more scary.
It's interesting that, because that's why I, you know, we were saying that we might want to seek out some other stuff by the same director, that it's a male director, a film about something that at least strongly lends itself to being read as a kind of sexual assault and trauma kind of metaphor. And, you know, foregrounds a young woman's experience so that it didn't feel voyeuristic or exploitative and, you know, just, yeah, very, very intelligent. Good on that guy.
Thank you very much. Yes, we enjoyed that. Okay, so I think that concludes our chat today about It Follows. I hope that you found that interesting. We have planned, not for the next few episodes, but we planned in future episodes to get some guests on as well to talk about some films with us. So that'll be really interesting. And we haven't decided what our second one is going to be, so we will reveal that on social media at some point.
Yes.
Is there anything else that you want to say to people before we go, Holly?
Just I hope it was interesting. I'm still working on the pauses and delivery, and I'm sure I say and like a lot. In the edit we'll make it more profesh, and just come with us on this journey.
I have to say thank you very much for everyone that's been supportive so far. This is something that we wanted to do for ourselves more than anything else, but it's brilliant that people want to listen to it, so we really appreciate it. We really appreciate all your support. So yeah. Thank you very much, our Panic Pixies, and until next time.
Thank you.
Bye. You were listening to a podcast by the Panic Pixie Screen Girls, who are Holly Parsons and Becky Lewis-Jones. This podcast was edited by Gareth Lewis-Jones.